The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
We begin with the news that the Higher Education Minister James Lawless is proposing a loan debt write-off scheme for healthcare students if they choose to remain working in Ireland after graduation. And we're hoping to speak to Minister Lawless now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire. How are you?
Thank you very much for joining us. So tell us about this suggestion or this plan that you have. How will it work?
Yeah, so look, we have a number of medical graduates and other professional graduates educated every year, some of whom then move to other jurisdictions to practice, for further study or for life experience. That's normal. It's positive. It's a good thing. But I think a lot of those people would like the opportunity to stay in Ireland and think the Irish system would benefit from that expertise remaining in the country. Now, I don't want to, as I said in the interview, put a brake on anybody. I think it's a rite of passage. I think it broadens the mind. I think it allows professional experience to be gained. But I do think it's worth exploring, is there an incentive where we could say to people, here is a reason, an additional reason, to remain in the state post-education. In some countries, we talk about return of service. We talk about solidarity service. And effectively, that you would pledge to work for the state for a number of years post-qualification. And in return for doing so, there would be an incentive, be that a bursary, be that some rebate on student debt, if that was applicable. Something along those lines to say okay. to people, look, here's an additional measure to help you stay.
Let's just look at the costs that are involved here for students in medicine. So graduate entry medicine courses will cost between 15 and 20,000 a year. That's over 4 years. Is that right?
So the graduate entry medicine is the full economic cost. So an undergraduate studying medicine, the actual place of year costs about 40 to 50,000 euro, but the state pays pretty much all of that. Mm-hmm. So the student is getting their free fees initiative, as has always been the way, as will always be the way, for their undergraduate. However, if you take medicine as a second degree, a graduate entry, the state pays roughly between 15 to 18,000 euro of that full cost. The student typically pays maybe between 16 to 20. So it's a significant contribution okay. that many people so,
and they may have to take afford. Out. They may have to take out a loan. So they're looking at starting their career with a significant debt sitting there. So what you're suggesting is that either the state gives them a bursary, which would mean covering, I would imagine, most of that money over the 4 year period, or a loan, an interest free loan.
Yeah, so look, we've two issues. I think the graduate entry medicine is very much my focus at the moment. We may look to roll this out to other areas if this works. I mean, I think there's a case to make for graduate entry across a number of professions to be accessed in the same way as graduate entry medicine is now, as a second follow-on degree, postgraduate, and shortened in duration because you already have a primary degree. But the way it works is there's two issues. One is that we find that students from more disadvantaged backgrounds can't access those graduate entry degrees because they don't have the 15, 16, 18,000 per annum to pay for it. And secondly, we know that we're at a time when we need to maximise our healthcare workforce in the country. We want our doctors, our nurses, our therapists, etc. to remain in Ireland. We want to incentivise them to do that. So it seems to me a way to bridge both of those issues is to give additional supports to students pursuing a graduate entry medical programme, mm-hmm. but to those supports be made conditional upon service to the state when you qualify. I think that's reasonable. I think it's done in a lot of countries. I've looked at a number of jurisdictions and how they operate models like this. They're actually quite common around the world. We don't typically have one in Ireland. The closest we have to it is what we call the NEPS, the education psychologist, where those students do receive a bursary if they pledge to work for the state. Okay. I think that works quite well. But there's other ways we can do it. And one way would be to assist.
Just to look at your plan that you've outlined so far. I mean, some people would look at that and they'd say, what you're doing here is holding people who don't come from a moneyed background hostage. So you're saying to them, you can do medicine, we'll help you out, but you've got to stay here. Now, if you're from a family that can afford to pay the up to 20 grand a year for 4 years, you don't have to stay in Ireland after you graduate. You can head off to Australia and have your life experience because you can afford to do it.
Well, very few people can afford the kind of fees we're talking about graduate entry medicine. You know, it's not easy for any family, I would suggest, regardless whether they're in the income strata. Of course, the higher up you go, you know, the more accessible it may be. But the difficulty at the moment is lower income students are not pursuing graduate entry medicine full stop. They don't have the means to access the courses. They don't have the means to pay those kind of fees as graduate entrants. And there's a gap there. And year on year, we see this being propagated. So so that graduate entry courses are becoming the preserve of the more affluent families. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a gap when we want to maximise our healthcare workforce, we want to make it accessible to as many as possible. And that's the fundamental goal of education also, to broaden that access point.
Yeah, now, and the other point is, like, why is it not attractive for them to stay here? And I get that some people want to go and have the experience of living overseas. That's fine. Take them out of the equation. But for a lot of people, it's not attractive to stay because of the, as a listener says here, the appalling working conditions that they face.
Yeah, so I think there's a number of reasons why students, medical students and other students, graduates, may wish to travel post-qualification. I visited Australia for my St. Patrick's trade mission very recently myself. I spoke to a number of universities, medical schools, doctors, engineers and other professionals working there. And of course, it's a rite of passage. And of course, many people want to travel and take up. And I think that's a good thing for the avoidance of doubt. I think that's actually a positive thing that everybody benefits from it. They have the opportunity to do it. But I also think that for those who may be in two minds, for those who would like to stay but maybe need a bit of support, I think that at a time when we need to maximise our working healthcare population, that it's incumbent on us to put some kind of incentive in place to say, are there other things we can do to encourage people to stay?
But you're not addressing the issue that for some it's just not attractive to stay because the Irish Health Service, in their opinion, is not a nice place to work.
So the conditions of the workforce and hospitals are something that is very much should be considered as part of this. It doesn't come within my own ministry. It's obviously the Minister for Health is in charge of that. But I am engaging with Minister Colin McNeill on this and on many other issues about increasing the workforce, increasing the number of therapists available. This year alone, I've increased the number of places by 1,100, right across the therapies, right across the disability support services, right across medicine, nursing. And also one of the things we're doing is bringing in not just replica carbon copies of degrees where they already exist and making new copies of them in other colleges, but say, for example, we take the medical school in UCG in Galway. That is now having a focus on rural and remote medicine. So it's not just taking the same that UCD and Trinity already do and doing it somewhere else. It's creating a new medical course with a different focus. In that case, in rural GPs, we know we want to grow the number of rural GPs, for example. If we look at the new veterinary course that I'm launching this year in ATU in Donegal and Mount Bellew and in SCTU in Waterford and Kildalton, again, it's about large animal practice. So we're not just replicating the existing UCD veterinary degree. We're making a new veterinary course to widen access, to increase the pathways into it, but actually putting a slightly different focus on that course so that we have a different type of vet coming out. So I think that's important that we continue to broaden the pathways. But in the case of the graduate entrance, many people, there is an issue that people cannot access the course at the moment because of the fees, because it is a second time degree. Fees are covered in full for all students at undergraduate level. But for the graduate entry, it is a barrier to entry that I've been made very aware of. And students and student unions have asked me to examine measures like this. Mm-hmm. I think it's entirely reasonable that we would do it. Going back to, I suppose, the broader workforce conditions, perhaps there are issues to be examined there, you know, and we will as a government look at all of those things in terms of making the quality of life more attractive in the country, housing supply, quality of life issues in terms of work-life balance, right across the many different aspects that
Minister,
people may choose to.
Are you at a stage now where you can tell us how much this might cost?
No, this is a proposal. This is a policy document that I'm working through at the moment. So there are a number of different options in terms of how it can be done. But there's something that I'm floating as a policy concept that I'm actively engaged with my department on for the last number of months that I will be looking at in the context of the upcoming budget. But this could be a long play. This is not going to be an overnight fix. But it is something that's been addressed. There are other ways it can be done also. For example, the commercial banks offered student loans to graduate entry medical students up until 2022. They stopped doing that. I've engaged with the banks to see why did they stop and is there a possibility that they could resume those loans and is there a way that the state could engage with the banks in a way that makes it attractive for the student with perhaps some kind of state guarantee or state support behind it.
Yeah, I have a listener here who got one of those graduate medicine loans from the bank. They say that they're rotating through jobs as part of a GP scheme, currently spending $2,500 a month between loans and rent and being paid €2,000. The incentive to leave, they say, is strong. They've regularly been underpaid and worked 80 plus hours. So it sounds to me, even if you take the loan out of that, it's still very difficult to ask people to stay when they're being asked to work all of those hours. They're being paid, as this person is, €2,000 a month. And Australia is over there waiting for you with open arms and far better conditions.
So, look, there's a number of issues that have to be tackled as part of this. We need to examine why is it that some of our healthcare graduates, not all by any means, but some, choose to practice in other countries post-qualification. Is there a way to, through the student support scheme that I can incentivize some of them to stay around? I hope so. Are there things we can do in the broader health workforce and working experience to incentivize them also? I'm sure that there are. And there's other practical things. For example, when I was in Australia, I was met at the University of Notre Dame, and we discussed the medical experience, the post-qualification training that they take up. So, for example, young doctors take up a four-year specialization, which whether it's oncology, gerontology, whatever their particular specialty is. Some of them said to me that they would like to, for different reasons, life stages or a relative at home or different circumstances changing, they would like to be able to port back home midway through that. But at the moment, as it's set up, once you start on that four-year specialisation, you have to stick on it. You can't just jump home midway. So I think there's ways we could better align the systems to allow portability both directions. And more broadly than that, the Erasmus file, people would be familiar with the Erasmus scheme. It's a student exchange scheme within the European Union. When I was in Australia, and when I'm taking the Erasmus debates in the European presidency the second half of this year, I'm looking to include Australia as a third country in that, because there is a pattern of exchange, and we have a lot of first generation Irish now living in Australia, being raised in Australia, children of Irish parents, who would like the opportunity to come the other direction and actually spend some time in Ireland. I think that two-way mobility, it's been one way for a long time, I think that two-way mobility would benefit both countries and enrich both of our education and healthcare systems.
And because of your portfolio, you can't influence what it is like for these doctors and graduates, what their experience of the workplace is like. That's not within your remit. All you can do is financially trap them for a few years after they graduate.
So what I can do is attempt to give them some kind of support, which incentivizes them choosing to work for the state as opposed to choosing to work for another state.
Mm-hmm. On the issue of the fees, now we're not talking about medicine here, right across the board, the contribution fee of $2,500. Is it right what I see this morning reported in the Independent that you mightn't be able to reduce that as was promised in the forthcoming budget because of the overrun in the Department of Education?
So, Claire, today is the 5th of May. I understand that the budget will be done on the 8th of October. That's 6 months away. So we have a long way to go before any decisions of any kind are made about the budget in my department or any other department.
But you made a clear promise, though, to bring down the contribution fee.
So I will attempt to honour every promise that I've made and more importantly, every promise in the Programme for Government, which includes many, many promises, as I did last year and as I succeeded in doing in last year's budget when I cut the student contribution fee permanently for the first time in 30 years by €500. Mm-hmm. I also increased grants across all levels. I also increased all thresholds. I also put more money for students with disabilities, students with mental health issues, right across the board, the Student Assistance Fund, to an historic high of student supports, to a stage now where 70% of households receive full or partial SUSE support. That's unprecedented. Families with an income of
Do you anticipate that there might be a problem with reducing the student contribution fee as you promised?
So right across the board. So I know the media and maybe I just like to focus on fees, but there's a
no. You focused on them. You said that you were going to reduce them.
So the Programme for Government. So when did I say that, Claire?
Before the budget last year. You said that because the temporary supports were reduced, you were going to work at bringing them down every year, incrementally bringing them down permanently.
Yes. Yes.
You took 500 off last year. I'm asking you, do you anticipate a problem with doing a similar move this year?
So, okay, I cannot predict on the 8th of May, on the 5th of May even, what I'm going to do on the 8th of October. So what we will do across government, we will look at the summer economic statement in June. That's 6 to 8 weeks away. We will see the broader parameters available to government spending for the year ahead. We will then go into the estimates discussions with the finance and public expenditure ministers. We will see what allocations have been given to each department, in my case, further and higher education. We will look at the spending envelope available to me. We will look at the many, many things that I would like to do with that, including cutting fees, but many other things as well. And we would see what the figures say. And then we would go into negotiations, putting best foot forward to secure the best possibility for students across fees, across grants, across supports, and across things like skilling, things like apprenticeships, things like AI upskilling, things like digital readiness, things like the construction workforce to meet our housing challenges, and indeed healthcare, as we've been discussing. So right across the many different aspects of the portfolio, I would be seeking the maximum possible package from the Department of Public Expenditure that I can then apply to all those good
uses. And is it your hope that you might be able to further reduce these student contribution fees?
Very much so. Absolutely. Of course it is. I know the Programme for Government. That's very much my intention and my desire. But as with any minister, it's dependent on the spending envelope available to me. So I would go into negotiations, but we're well off that yet. We're 6 months off that yet.
But conversations and considerations begin now. Yeah. And I know there's concern, isn't there, across all departments because of this overrun in the Department of Education and this, what we heard from the from Minister Jack Chambers, that other departments would have to rein their spending in. So I suppose my broader question is, how does that affect you and your plans?
Yeah, so it's too early to say. But obviously, you know, in this situation that we have at the moment, where one department, where every other department has to contribute to a levy to support the Department of Education, obviously that places additional challenges for all of our spending plans. But I would say it's far too early, 6 months from the budget, to say where exactly that might fall, what impact that might have. But it does make for a more challenging situation. But as I did last year, and as I would attempt to do every year that I'm honoured to serve, I would secure the best possible deal for all the students, for all the colleges, all the researchers, all the apprentices on my portfolio and support them in every way possible, depending on the allowance available to me at budget time.
Okay, Minister, thank you very much for joining us. That's the Minister for Further and Higher Education, James Lawless. And listening to all of that, I'm joined by the President of the UCD Students' Union, Michael Roach. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Claire.
Will we start with the Student Contribution Fund? Are you concerned that it won't be brought down from 2,500? It was 3,000, but of course, it was temporarily reduced by €1,500. So people saw what happened last year as an increase. So what do you think now, having heard the minister?
Look, I had meetings with the minister around the time that the fee was brought back up to €2,500. And I think the attitude from a lot of student unions around the country was to swallow this one because there was a commitment to decreasing the student contribution fee throughout the duration of the government. And from UCD Student Union's perspective, we were very clear with the minister that we understood that the cuts to the student contribution fee were essentially what was left over in the departmental budget after everything else was spent. And in many ways, this problem rested with the Department of Public Expenditure. However, we asked for a multi-annual plan of how that cut was going to be introduced throughout the duration of this government. And we're yet to see it delivered.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the minister said we're a long way out from the budget, but I'm sure you know, as we all do, that these negotiations start early. Would you anticipate that there would be an issue, given what we've heard about the overspend of the Department of Education?
I would be very concerned that there will be an issue. And this is why, like, UCD Students' Union's view from the very beginning in this process was that we need to see a multi-annual funding framework for the cuts in the Student Contribution Fund. And when that wasn't delivered, it was always going to be left up to essentially ransom come this time of the year when negotiations around the budget starts. However, if we got something like a much more solid commitment over the course of the government and an actual plan to bring down the student contribution fee, it wouldn't leave this question opening at budget time every single year about where will the student contribution fee be in September.
Now, let's move to this suggestion from James Lawless about the loan debt write-off scheme or bursary scheme for graduate entry medicine, medical students, in order to convince them to stay. What do you think?
It's an interesting proposal, and UCD Students' Union have recently surveyed about 25% of the graduate entry medicine population in Ireland. And the first thing I'd kind of like to push back on is this idea that it's GEM students that are causing the issue and that they're the ones that are moving away. That simply isn't the case, Claire. 70% of graduate entry medicine students who responded to our survey said that they wish to remain in Ireland. And the reason for this is quite clear. It's because of how the pay scale in medicine works, whereby their undergraduate colleagues will start on the pay scale a lot earlier. We've graduate entry medicine students who qualify in their early 30s, late 20s. The undergraduate colleagues have much more of a head start than them. They have to stay in the country in order to move up that scale quick, in the way that their undergraduate colleagues don't have to do. And while we would always welcome financial support for graduate entry medicine students, I don't necessarily think that this is the right one.
So you think that if you increase the pay, the entry level pay, that actually those 70% of graduate entry medical students, a lot more of them would stay without having to have this financial incentive on the loan or bursary side.
100%. The issue with mobility in medicine comes from the undergraduate students who, for a lot of very right reasons, mainly due to conditions which you would have raised with the minister, decide to train in Australia. And, you know, these are professionals like my cousin, who's currently qualifying as a paediatrician out in Australia, simply because the conditions out there are far superior to them they are in Ireland. Graduate entry medicine students simply do not have that mobility because of where they start on the pay scale in the HSE.
A lot of people just want to travel, though, don't they? Especially in their 20s, experience another country, another climate, another health service before they come back.
Absolutely. And I think that's an important point as well. Like, we'd always say that education is only part of what happens within the classroom. The rest is the experience that you bring from your own life into whatever workplace that you end up being in. And I think locking students down into service in the HSE isn't necessarily the best way of getting the best doctors all of the time. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I think that improving conditions would see a lot more people stay anyways.
The other point here, which I think is important, is if you are from a well-to-do family who can afford these fees of up to 20,000 a year for 4 years, you're not going to need to be trapped by any sort of a golden deal, a golden handcuffs bursary deal.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, like, graduate entry medicine, although it was originally brought into universities as a money raising tool, what it has become essentially is a more diverse pathway into medicine. And what we found in particular when the loan schemes were available from the commercial banks in the state is that many people who wanted a second chance at doing medicine might not have gotten the very high points it requires at an undergraduate level, had an opportunity to do so. I think a bursary in that instance could actually help these people, depending on how it was rolled out. Or even we've looked at options, for instance, a state sponsored loan that goes through your revenue account as an alternative option. What we actually found interesting in surveying the graduate entry medicine population is that for different income brackets, the policy outcome was varied. So mm-hmm. for those higher income students, what they were looking for was a state backed loan system. For the middle income students, they wanted a SUSE expansion. And for lower income students, they wanted a free fee scheme expansion. So I think that there is policy proposals there. One I hadn't heard back from students on the ground was a bursary. However, we'd have to see what the plan would look like.
All right. And we'll keep an eye on that, Michael. Thanks for your time. Michael Roach there, president of the UCD Student.
The Clare Byrne Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.